Thank you, Brian. Ladies and gentlemen, just a reminder, if you would like to ask questions, please press star one on your telephone. Our first question comes from Larry Gandler at Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Thank you, guys. Can you hear me?
Yes, Larry.
Good morning. Oh, great. Thanks, Brian. Excellent result. Look, a few questions from me. First question is, with regards to your outlook for Australasia, it seems quite conservative. I imagine can volumes were the largest contributor of the strong performance in the first half. What's your view towards can volume in the second half? Why would the momentum? I'm sorry about that, Brian. Why would the momentum ease up in the second half?
You are correct. We certainly saw strong can volume in the first half, which was the primary driver of the revenue and the profitability growth. We would expect strong can volume to continue in the second half. Can volume is generally weighted to the first half, particularly as the run-up into the summer period, so it will have a lesser of an impact as we go through relative to the total beverage business in the second half. But we do expect that to remain strong. To your question about conservatism, look, there are a lot of unknowns, particularly with the impact of the China exports. So probably as you would all expect, we've taken a conservative view of the impact of that. We don't know yet what the redeployment opportunities look like for our customer base. We are working with them very closely, the timing of which there is some uncertainty around. So we have looked at the scenario where we will have virtually no product supplied through our customer base to China for the second half. We have a pipeline of opportunities that we're pursuing outside of what they are pursuing, which would be generally non-wine product, for us to find alternate homes for that glass. And we would expect those to start to have some impact as we go into 2022 and beyond, but limited opportunity to cover that off during the second half of FY21.
Okay, I do have a couple more questions. That's pretty clear. Just clarification on that. China, for you guys, in terms of glass exposure, would be no different than the industry. Say 10% of industry exposure would be similar to you guys?
Yeah, that's a pretty good ballpark to use. Sorry. Yep.
Okay, great. Just in terms of the U.S. business, fantastic momentum there we're observing in terms of national box shipments. Sounds like you guys are participating. But it looks like costs are starting to rise. The paper companies are starting to take price increases. Are you absorbing those price increases, passing them on with ease? What's the state of play there?
We have certainly seen those increases coming through, and we are passing those through to the market. And the ones that have come through to date, we have had full success in getting those through to the market, and we would fully expect that to continue.
Okay, great. Thank you. Last question from me, Brian, is just on the U.S., you sort of mentioned international expansion in cans. The U.S. is clearly a market in short supply there. Is this, since you've mentioned international expansion, is this something that's a concrete opportunity on your desk, or are you just kind of looking at the industry?
Well, at this point, we'd say we're looking at the broader industry, and when we say beverage, we mean broader beverage, not just cans or cans specifically. And, you know, these are more medium to longer term opportunities that we're assessing. You know, the immediate priority for us would be investment in organic growth opportunities and capacity expansions here in Australasia and building on the capabilities that we have in the existing business, particularly in OPS in North America. So it's a little bit more longer dated rather than something we've got imminent there, Larry.
Okay, fantastic. Thank you very much, guys.
Thank you, Larry.
Our next question comes from David Errington of Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Brian. I really enjoyed your presentation on OPS and what you're looking at, or establishing what you're looking to do in optimizing, enhancing and expanding. To gain an understanding to what you've done to date, in terms of optimising, and you've obviously got some very good margin improvement there. Can you go through a little bit of more in detail as to what you actually mean by improving account profitability, enhancing, you know, getting efficiencies through harnessing data? Because again, they're pretty broad buckets. And then you've got enhancing sales force effectiveness, which basically means rationalisation. So I suppose the point of the question, first point of the question is, can you break out what the improvement has been through gross profit versus improvement to cost of doing business, what the sustainability of that is? In other words, I'd like to see it probably more from gross profit improvements, because there's probably an element there of business improvement rather than just cost reduction, although, you know, there's a bit there. But, and then how that's going to lead into the next improvement in the enhanced bucket as to what you can build on that, as to what we can look forward in terms of dollars and cents in the next, say, 12 to 18 months.
Yep. Thanks. So a lot in your question there. Look, the first priority and where a lot of the improvement has come from is related to the account profitability improvement. And this stems from work we really started over 12 months ago. And off the back of our SAP implementation and our business intelligence tools that we could hang off that, we really started to get better insights in terms of customer profitability down to a specific customer slash SKU level, which we did not have before. So given we have, you know, north of 100,000 SKUs and 10,000 plus customers, we take some time, or took some time, as you would expect, to start to go through that and really understand where do we make money, where don't we make money, put some disciplines in place, you know, the rigor and cadence within the organization to start to address that and make inroads in ensuring that not only we address where we had underperforming parts of the business, but also as we bring new business online, we look at it through that lens and make sure that it is going to be profitable business that comes into the stable rather than something we're going to go and address later. So we're still early, I would say, in that journey. So there's still opportunity ahead of us, and the teams are working really hard on that. So I think you should expect from us some continued focus, and we will, as a result of that, most likely have some churn within the business. So, you know, we'll look at, you know, customer churn. So whilst we will be moving the momentum towards growth and the sales force effectiveness is really starting to target those market segments and products where we know we can get a bigger bang for our buck, right, and focusing on these value-added areas. So I think, you know, it'll be the blend of both, continuing to work on account profitability and starting to focus the sales organization on areas that we know we can get a higher return.
So it's just not cost-cutting. It's, you're just not cutting people. It's actual business improvement that you're actually seeing this. Yes. Oh, that's positive. In terms of... Yeah. Yeah. And following into OV, is it the same strategy there, or is it a little bit more of a blunt edge to that business?
It's fair to say during the first half, we did some cost cutting, and that needed to happen given, you know, we suffered, based on the size of that business, a fairly substantial loss in the second half of FY20. So there was some cost cutting had to take place, and the team in the last several months, so the second quarter of the year, have then been focused on starting to optimize what we have, pursue some revenue opportunities, even within, you know, the very subdued retailer market. So, you know, we are behind year on year on revenue, but, you know, pleasingly they have started to build some momentum in that area, and are really focused on initiatives like pricing, you know, and estimating accuracy and those sorts of things that are really enhancing, you know, the capability within the business. But I think, you know, a big portion of the recovery thus far has been cost cutting.
Yeah. So you sound a lot more confident, Brian, or certainly Aurora sounds a lot more confident that you've ruled the line under the US business, and now you can look forward to business improvement and earnings improvement in both businesses. That seems to be, not putting words into your mouth, but that seems to be the message you're giving today.
Yeah, I would say that's the case, and we'd certainly say we're further on the journey in OPS than we are on OV, and our confidence in OPS is stronger. OV, we've still got some some work to do, but we're comfortable. We're at least in the black now, and that was priority number one.
Good start. Yeah. Thanks, Brian. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Brooke Campbell-Crawford at JP Morgan. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thanks for taking my question. The first one's just on the CAM business. Very strong growth outside of CSDs there in the half, and you talk about that expected to continue. Just wondering if you've won, you know, new customers or increased wallet share with your existing customers outside of CSD, that is, that's driving this growth, or is it more just temporary market strength you're seeing there in the market?
It's not market share gain, Brooke, to answer your question. It's our core business and our core customers, and we've seen, you know, continued shift from other formats into cans, and certainly, you know, the channels that people are buying products are more at-home consumption, you know, and grocery channel has driven an increase in can demand, and based on, you know, forward predictions from our customers, we expect, you know, reasonably steady demand to continue and to be able to grow off that base. We don't think we're going to see a slide backwards from where we now sit.
That's clear, thanks. And the second question is just around US margins. Just wondering if you have any sort of medium-term target for that business. Is the target to kind of get back to prior highs? And that'd be the first part of the question. And the second part would be just if you think there's any potential structural changes in the market now relative to when you previously had those higher margins, that would potentially make it more difficult to get back to sort of 5% plus even margins in that division.
Well, certainly our target and our genuine belief is we can get, you know, back to those historical 5% return on sales numbers, and that is our aim. You know, we believe we can progress towards that over the coming years. You know, it's, we're not going to see an immediate jump to that next year, but, you know, we would progressively expect to work towards that. And no, look, we wouldn't see any structural shift within the broader industry that would hamper that. In fact, what I mentioned earlier in terms of our continued focus towards more value-added services and, you know, higher margin potential industries that will service as we look at growth opportunities, you know, I think we will, you know, we will inch our way towards that regardless of what's happening in the broader industry.
Great, I'll leave it there, thanks.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Craig Woolford at Citigroup. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Brian and Sean. Just a few questions. Just firstly, with regards to the cost performance in the Americas, North American business, it was obviously very good. Is there anything we should be mindful about some costs returning into the business if revenue trends continue to improve in the second half?
I'd say not particularly. We're very conscious of that, and the leaders of our respective businesses have been very conscious of that, where we've taken cost out, that, you know, we don't have this yo-yo effect of, you know, taking particularly people cost out and then having to add it straight back in. And that's been part of the review process when we have made those changes. And I think we are comfortable that, you know, we've been able to reset the base. You know, an example would be, you know, we have within the OPS business, you know, by force, I have to go to a lot of remote working, so we still have some 2,000 people working remotely. You know, as a result of that, it's enabled us to then have a lot of the support functions support multiple locations, where we used to have some dedicated support by either distribution center or manufacturing center. So we're able to actually get some efficiency across that. So where we've taken some cost out, it's really by driving that overall efficiency. And that model we intend to keep on going, right? Our team are comfortable working on that or through that model, and we believe the efficiencies we can lock in, as an example of how we're comfortable that won't creep back in.
Okay, thanks for that. Yeah, it's clear. With regards to your OPS business, more of a strategic question, I guess. Are you seeing discussions with some of the customers about packaging demand growth. It's probably at odds with some of the environmental concerns out there, but with COVID, there's been more concern and more protection around packaging for different products, particularly food items. Are you seeing an increase in demand in some of your sub-segments or customers?
Well, we've certainly seen an increase in demand from an e-commerce perspective, and a direct delivery perspective, which has driven overall packaging demand. So our manufacturing business, has increased, we would say, in line with what we've seen in the box industry. And we think there's been a reset in that. So people won't necessarily revert back to, going fully into bricks and mortar retailers when, things settle back down. So I think there's been a shift, but more so in terms of how people get product sent to them as opposed to, how product is necessarily base packed.
Understood. And I understand that the can market is quite tight here in Australia, called out the demand that you've seen in beverages. Are you seeing any increase in import competition, particularly as the Australian dollar has strengthened over recent months?
No, that's not something that we see here in Australasia. And to be honest, it's probably not something that we would expect to see. Most of the industry is pretty tapped out globally.
Yeah, it's pretty tight. Okay, thanks. Thanks, Brian. Appreciate that.
Thanks, Ray.
Our next question comes from Andrew Scott at Morgan Stanley. Please go ahead.
Oh, hi, guys. Thank you. Just a couple from me. Brian, first of all, just on the wine bottle impact, you've obviously called out a couple of factors there. I wonder if you could just sort of give us a bit more colour, sort of orders of magnitude between the vintage issue, which is obviously largely a one-off, and the China restrictions, which is perhaps here to stay a little bit longer. Just anything to help us sort of size those two and sort of what you're putting into those expectations for a flat Aussie outcome year on year.
Look, it's actually hard to even for us to break that down, because a lot of what we supply to the broad customer base, we're not really sure where it ends up. So what gets exported versus what goes domestically. So it is actually really difficult to break that down. But then, the smaller proportion of it would be in our second half outlook there would be from the domestic, overall wine vintage impact. And the majority of it would be from, lower exports. So, order of magnitude, certainly a greater, far greater portion to the exports, but I can't give you an exact percentage. And as I said, then there's multiple components of that for the future. What comes back from a domestic standpoint, a wine vintage, what our customers, existing customers, are able to find alternate homes for, which would flow into us from a positive perspective. And, we are out there vigorously pursuing opportunities, and we've got quite a few in our pipeline, which would be non-wine opportunities, and some of those are import replacements. So it's not necessarily having to fight with our local competitor for additional volume. They're import replacements that we believe would fit within our manufacturing capability. But again, you can't turn these around and start producing them and selling them, in a fairly short space of time. So they're more going to have a positive impact in terms of covering off that and rebuilding the volume base, as we get into 22 and beyond.
No, that's very helpful. Thank you. And then just one more for Sean, if I can. Sean, a strong balance sheet. You mentioned, well below your target gearing range, looking in a good position there, arguably not necessarily being rewarded for that if we look at the share price, and certainly if we look at packages around the world, these businesses can carry a much higher level of gearing. So just interested, any thought of getting a little bit more immediate with capital management? I know you have the buyback there, but certainly you can make an argument that you could sort of immediately step up the gearing to a certain degree, and conscious that you did scale back the capital management post the fibre sale last year, given the uncertainty.
Yeah, look, I think good question. And The current plan is to complete the initial buyback, and that'll increase leverage at the full year, and then we'll take stock and have a look at where we are at that point. But our preference remains to invest capital in our existing business. That's kind of the priority, and that's where we'll focus our efforts.
Okay, understood. Thank you.
Our next question comes from Richard Johnson at Jefferies. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much. Just returning to the US, Brian, we're seeing price inflation really across most packaging formats now in the US. So presumably looking ahead, that's going to help your revenue growth rate step up. And I know historically in those sorts of times that actually helps your dollar margin. Is there any reason to believe that won't be the case going forward?
Our aim would be at minimum to make sure we're recovering those increases. So, that's point one. If there's opportunity to increase margin off the back of it, then, absolutely, we want to try and rebuild that, particularly where we've been over recent years. But we wouldn't be internally relying on that as our pathway to increase margins. But we'll see case by case where those opportunities exist.
Got it. But presumably your more sophisticated back end of your business actually helps that whole process, given your investment in technology, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Okay, great. And then just trying to get a better feel for the seasonality in the US business, if you were to take out the impact of Pollock, can you help me understand what the seasonality would be, please?
Well, it's still first half weighted, but at the moment it's really difficult because the environment we're living with, within COVID, has probably thrown some of those historical seasonality and trends out the window a little bit. So, I wouldn't like to give you a weighting. I mean, obviously, if I give you a specific number, that'll tell you where the second half will be, so I won't do that. But, for us, we still think it is first half weighted, not massively, but it is first half weighted.
Oh, that's great. Thanks. And then just to in Australia, I was just thinking about your commentary around glass and your and potential penetration of non-beer and non-wine markets. I mean, I understand, obviously, there's import replacement opportunity, but would it be right to think that there are some sectors that you're looking at that may be pretty similar to what wine was like when it was pretty much a monopoly, so i.e. there's a significant opportunity from an efficiency and cost perspective for somebody else to take share?
We always look at all of the opportunities and to try and optimise our portfolio. And, for us, the sweet spot is wine. That's where our assets are geared to produce. And certainly from a location standpoint, being in South Australia, the geography is important. So as soon as we start to ship products, outside of South Australia, the freight impost starts to eat into your margin pretty heavily. So those things you've also got to weigh up, not just relative to the particular industry segment or the type of product. So I think we've always got an eye on everything that's utilised within Australia and continue to try and optimise the portfolio. But as wine volume has decreased, it looks like it will be for a little while, we then go to the next best options, if you will, to make sure that we're continuing to optimise, from a volume and margin perspective.
Got it. Thanks. And then finally, can you just remind me how material the capacity expansion in specialty cans is in Revesby?
It's a $13 million investment that we're making. And what it really does is provide us the capability for flexibility for these multi-size cans in slim and sleek. So it allows us to flex across the range. Rather than a massive capacity increase, it really just gives us, certainly as we're seeing the trends, now the trend has swung back to more of a classic or 375ml can more recently. But as we had seen an increasing trend towards the smaller format cans, it gives us the capability to flex into that, which, we need to support our customer base. And certainly from a margin perspective, you know, there's a little bit more favourable impact on that sort of format as well.
Fabulous. Thank you very much. That's it from me.
Our next question comes from John Purtell at Macquarie. Please go ahead.
Hey, John.
Oh, good day, Brian and Sean. How are you?
Good.
Just had three questions, please. The first one, just in relation to the glass business here. Brian, in terms of what the China issue means on the ground for your glass manufacturing, you have to turn down the furnace and reduce operating rates through the next 6 months, or you know, can you mitigate that with sort of some inventory build and import reduction?
And that's exactly what we're looking at. So the conservative view at the moment has a combination of those things, John. So, you know, that's why it's probably a little greater impact that you're seeing than what some people may have assessed, you know, based on how much we supply to the export market. So if we do slow down the furnace, or a furnace or furnaces, you know, this is a fairly well-invested fixed cost type business. So your fixed cost recoveries are not there if you slow down the volume. So it's that balancing act. So there is a portion of that that we are forecasting in our number. So obviously the more we can do to build future demand, whether it be into FY22 or even at the back end of FY21, you know, we could confidently either build some inventory to support that or in fact sell it in FY21. So, you know, we're continuing to watch that closely. We have not dialed down the furnaces at this point of time. You know, that's a decision we'll make over the coming months.
Okay, thank you. And look, just two questions on North America. Firstly, if you're able to comment on the performance of the Pollock business, there is mention of increased competition there.
Yeah, look, the Pollock business, I would say, is broadly in line with how we've seen the rest of the business go. It has had a slightly heavier weighting towards retail within Pollock. So that part of it, you know, has been, let's say, a bit up and down based on the retail segmented services. But more broadly, it's been tracking in line with our expectations and with the broader business.
Thank you. And last one, you know, last year you indicated, this is obviously through the second half, re-North America, a COVID impact of minus 15 mil US. Your organic growth looks like was about sort of 5 mil US in the period. So I suppose the two-part question is, do you expect to be able to recover over time that full 15 mil, or is some of that lost structurally? And I suppose how much of that have you recovered in the first half? I mean, if you assumed all of that market growth was recovery, it looks like you've got about a third of that back.
I would say the piece that's recovered is what we've seen in the broader box demand. You know, that's certainly been some market recovery that has fueled the revenue growth, or the majority of the revenue growth that you've seen. So that piece probably roughly in line with what you're talking about. We've got back the improvement we've seen in the other parts of the business, I would put down to self-help. So there are actions and activities that we and the teams have been taking to improve the business's underlying performance. You know, it's getting more and more difficult to, you know, build a bridge and even internally try and unwind all of that, John. You know, and given that, you know, the impact of COVID is going to run right through now into, I think, into at least well into the start of FY22, it's going to be difficult for us to unwind and say what's COVID recovery and what's not. But certainly some of the impact that we saw last year, we've seen, you know, a positive return based on the box demand increase. The rest of it, I think, has been the work the team have done to improve the business.
Terrific. Many thanks.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Mason Riley at UBS. Please go ahead.
Oh, thanks, gents. Brian, just a quick comment in relation to I think your statement you made about M&A not being an immediate priority in North America. Completely understand where you're at the moment with that business in terms of the turnaround. But at what point do you think it can become a priority? What are you expecting in terms of, I guess, some of the financial metrics that for that business and the new management team to be delivering before you can sort of resume that bolt-on M&A strategy that was put on pause?
One is ensuring that we are very comfortable with the underlying performance in the business, that the processes that are in place, you know, are sustainably delivering for us. You know, and we are confident in that now, but what we want to do is see, you know, continued momentum in that. There's still a lot of work to do and a lot of opportunity we have in those areas. You know, what we referred to earlier in, you know, account profitability as an example is one. We still have, you know, I think a lot of opportunity to optimize the business performance. So we don't want to distract the team in any way by starting to look at M&A opportunities. We are also starting to look at and build capability from an integration standpoint. So we are having a good look at the work we've done thus far and need to continue to do on Pollock, for example, you know, the finalization of the integration activities are there. So we're putting some dedicated resources on that and developing some internal capability, all to help us be well positioned, you know, as we probably exit this calendar year to say, all right, we're now comfortable that the base business is robust, performing well, we've built some additional capability, that building on that will truly be additive to the business rather than be a potential distraction.
Okay, and final question on the North American margin improvement. Has it been possible to assess the impact of the SAP rollout in terms of the self-help initiatives, but also, I guess, some of the benefits from that SAP implementation in terms of the margin uplift?
Well, I think we could comfortably say, you know, the gross margin improvement that we have seen over the last 12 months, you know, is directly related to our ability now to drill down in the business and see, you know, at that micro level where we're performing and where we're not performing and help us optimize the business. So, you know, it has certainly streamlined it. The opportunities are still in front of us, I think, in terms of further optimization in that regard. You know, there's still a lot we can learn from SAP. There's still a lot of process streamlining we can do to make our life a little bit easier in operating in that environment. But we would clearly attribute, you know, our margin improvement, gross margin improvement activity to the capability that's been installed there.
Okay, thank you.
Just a final call. If you would like to ask a question, please press star one. Our next question comes from Keith Chow at MST. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, gents. A couple of quick questions, principally follow up on the North America business. Brian, I think you mentioned one just in your prior comments around account profitability. And last year, you know, the business was obviously undergoing a process to assess each of its customers. Can you perhaps give us a bit of a sense of how far through the customer portfolio that exercise has been completed and, you know, how much further there is to go? And I'm assuming that once the first round is done, that'll be an iterative process going forward as well.
You're right, it is an iterative process. Look, I would say we're still, you know, a relatively small way through that process. You know, as with any of these things, you tackle the larger priority ones first. So where we've had customers who identified that, you know, we're losing money with or, you know, underperforming, you know, they were the immediate cabs off the rank, and we made some changes there. And in fact, you know, there were some customers that we either no longer do business with in totality or, you know, have elected to only do business with part of their entire network because we couldn't do it sustainably at a profitable level for us. So we've had to make some of those tough decisions. So there's the number of customers, and from a number of customers, we're only a small way through that. But in terms of starting to tackle the biggest bang for our buck, you know, we're making some good inroads into that and have done, certainly in the first half. And as to your point, you know, it'll be iterative. Yes, you know, we'll continue to do that. What we are putting in place now is also good visibility as we take on work to be able to run that work through this tool, right? So we can basically predict at a sort of fully loaded cost to serve level what sort of profitability it will deliver to us. So we don't get in a situation where we bring on work and then a month or two later we're having to go back and try and find ways to improve its profitability. So that'll lessen that need to do that rework later on.
So Brian, is it the case that you've identified and remedied all of your loss-making customers and that you have no loss-making customers left in your portfolio, and then now it's just about tuning up the profitability to what would be deemed to be reasonable levels?
No, I'd love to say that was true, Keith, but it's not. I'd say we've tackled the biggest of those, but we still have a reasonable number of loss-making customers. And as you can imagine, it's not as simple as just going and saying, well, I need a price increase or we don't do business, because depending on the location we service them from, then there's some fixed costs in that location that don't disappear if you stop trading with that customer. So therefore, you know, depending on where you're losing money, it's not at a variable cost level, it's at a total allocated cost. So we've got to work through those and make sure that we're making the right business decisions and doing them carefully. But there are still quite an amount of loss-making customers, you know, at a net profit level that we would see as opportunity for us, you know, over the next period of time.
Okay, thank you. That's great. The second question I had was in relation to the expansion of digital capabilities within the North America business. I think last time, or at the last set of results, there was some discussion around appointing a senior executive to run that part of the business or that strategy. And part of that was to improve the interaction with customers, whether it be through e-commerce platforms, self-service tools, e-marketing, et cetera, et cetera. Can you give us a sense of how far through that process you are? I know that the senior executive was to be engaged in the second half of last calendar year, but has the strategy been formed and is that actively being pursued at this point in time? And if possible at all, would it be possible to put a bit of a number around the benefits for that?
Well, to your last question first, not yet. So we're still sort of formulating what we think all that'll be worth over time. But to your previous questions, the answer to all of those is yes. We employed a new head of digital experience and transformation back in October of last year, a gentleman by the name of Sean Mahaney, who, you know, has some very strong credentials in this area and helping a number of organizations on this journey. So he has been working with the team and now with our new president, Frank Panizzi, on developing our roadmap for our digital transformation. So we have that cleared, and in fact, you know, we'll be reviewing the updated version of that with our strategic plan update with the board in a few weeks' time. So we're really comfortable where we've got good visibility on what that looks like over the coming years. We will have initialing capability installed in the business towards the end of FY21 relative to, you know, e-commerce capabilities. So starting to, you know, get up to what you would say is expected standard for a market leader in this field in terms of those capabilities, and then building on those, you know, over the coming years in terms of additional capabilities, you know, whether it be, you know, ability for people to interact directly and get quotes online and all these sorts of things, making tools available for our sales reps to, you know, streamline their roles. You know, we've got a whole suite of things that form part of that roadmap and, you know, ties nicely into having the base capability we've got in SAP, and we want to make sure that we do that in a controlled manner and that we have, you know, good data and data integrity behind us. So there's a lot of work going on that front as well, so that we, you know, don't get ourselves in a position where we launch something and find that, you know, what our customers are going to interact with is not what they're expecting.
And then the capital associated with those projects, do we assume that it's rolled up in the capital outlook for the rest of this year?
Yes, yeah, and these are not substantial amounts of capital. So in our capital outlook for this year is the biggest chunk. And then going forward, you know, we're only talking, you know, probably a few million dollars a year of outlay with this roadmap we've got, because we've got the foundations in place and are spending some of that money this year. What we're talking about build on, we're not, you know, talking huge chunks of capital here to transform the business.
Thanks, Brian. And so, do you expect those new digital strategies to help you grow your customer base, or does it just make it stickier and easier for your customers to deal with you? Or is there a genuine proposition for new customers coming on to Aurora's platform?
I think in the shorter medium term, it's helping with the ease of doing business with Aurora. You know, is one of the critical things here. It will help from a cost of serve perspective for us. You know, if we can, particularly for a lot of our small customers, you know, transition them to an online model, you know, that will help. So, you know, I think we've got an opportunity in that arena. And then as we build out the capability and some, you know, some more sophisticated tools and e-marketing tools, you know, we believe it will help us grow the business from a revenue perspective, but we're not banking that, you know, on that. Really, in the next couple of years, it'll be beyond that that we would have those expectations.
Okay, great. Thanks for your time, Brian. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have no further questions, so I'll hand back to you, Brian. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, operator, and thank you all. Some great questions, so thank you all for that, and happy to have any follow-ups with any of you as you think through more and digest more of the information that we've provided today. So as we said at the outset, we're really happy with how the first half has gone, and we believe we've got some good momentum in the business that we can carry forward. So look forward to talking with you more over the coming days and weeks. Thanks, operator.
Thanks so much. Ladies and gentlemen, that does conclude the call today. Thank you for attending. You may now disconnect.